Last week, with Popper's help, we were able to see that Marx's thought, his reasoning, in many respects followed Plato's. While not tracing the correspondence in their thinking, Martin Bernal has noted Marx's affinity for ancient Greece, a predilection for which was installed in every educated, quote unquote, European. Recall Martin Bernal told us, as this is what we noted in our August 30th, 2015 show, that in the wake of the French Revolution, after the humiliation of the traditional government, Prussian, and its beloved army after their catastrophic defeat by Napoleon at Jena in 1806, the Prussian monarchy turned to W. von Humboldt to undertake reforms. In 1809, among other reforms undertaken to face the French Revolutionary challenge, Humboldt was entrusted with the reorganization of the educational system. He based the new structure on Bildung, derived from his earlier sketch on the study of antiquity and of the Greeks in particular, which he believed would reanimate the German people after their crushing defeats. And that's brief interjection here. It seems it reanimated Marx for sure, or inspired, perhaps, better word. Continuing, it is possible that Humboldt originally intended this Bildung for the whole population. In the event, however, it became the stamp of the meritocratic elite. And that's Martin Bernal's Black Athena, The Afro-Asiatic Roots of Classical Civilization, Volume 1, The Fabrication of Ancient Greece from 1785 to 1985. And when we read some of, and I'm still trying to decide how much to share, of a book I just picked up recently, which was by Emmanuel Wallerstein, written before Does Capitalism Have a Future? This was written in, or published in 2011, and is directly relevant to the subject matter we're now engaged with, which is what happened in the aftermath of the French Revolution. What these power guys got busy, what did they do? And so we're going to think through his take on it after a suitable chunk, after an adequate chunk of the 18th Brumaire. And so then Martin Bernal quotes Hegel, who lived from 1770 to 1831, quote, "The name of Greece strikes home to the hearts of men of education in Europe, and more particularly is this so with us Germans. They, the Greeks, certainly received the substantial beginnings of their religion, culture, from Asia, Syria, and Egypt. But they have so greatly obliterated the foreign nature of this origin, and it is so much changed, worked on, turned around, and altogether made so different, that what they, as we, prize, know, and love in it is essentially their own," unquote, from Hegel, the philosopher who served the Prussian state and power through the subsequent ages. Bernal states that Hegel was no doubt typical of his age, and that Marx, who lived from 1818, who would therefore be about 10, as, excuse me, yeah, about 10, 9, as Humboldt was instituting Bildung in the education, in the Prussian educational system. Who lived from 1818, Karl Marx, to 1883, shared Hegel's beliefs about ancient Greece. Quote from Martin Bernal, "Hegel's argument that the Orient was the childhood of mankind and Greece its adolescence strongly resembles, of course, the views of the young Hegelian Karl Marx. Marx argued that it was only in Greece that the individual had cut the umbilical cord from his community and had changed from a Gattungswesen, a species being, to a Zoon Politikon, a political animal, a city dweller. With his lifelong love for the country, Greece, he completely accepted the prevailing view that in every aspect of its civilization, Greece was categorically different from and superior to all that had gone before. However, Marx went beyond this to claim that Greece towered over its posterity. Such a claim then caused a problem in that it made Greece go against the stream of progress, that propaganda that power so relies on. You see it all around us today, this ideology. In an attempt to deal with this little problem, Marx wrote, quote, "In the case of the arts, it is well known that certain periods of their flowering are out of all proportion to the general development of society, hence also to the material foundation." You hear, Virginia? Those highly ingenious turnings and twistings into which the intellect ties itself when rid of the cares of the household and the family. And we need to consider that, all you folk who are concerned that unless we have all those folk removed from the cares of the household and the family, that we will sacrifice all the wonderful innovations that have made our life a delight. Except in the heart department and in the knowing we're loved department and in the being able to care about our brothers and sisters department and have our own lives and develop our own gifts and have our time be our own. All of those things, you set all that aside and focus on, you know, well, there's, look at that. We don't have to walk upstairs. We have an elevator. And what if folks weren't forced to build that for us? You know what I'm saying? All of this notion of without the rigid categorization and hierarchy, blah, blah, blah. It is time for us to have these discussions and recognize that we don't need the blah, blah, blah. We need beauty. We need love. We need caring about each other. These are the things that a good life is made of.